ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Canto 7, Chapter 3, Text 24. Sa, translation, please repeat. Seeing Lord Brahma present before him in the sky, carried by his swan airplane, Hiranyakashipu was extremely pleased. He immediately fell flat with his head on the ground and began to express his obligation to the Lord. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yepi anya devata bhakta yajanti sharyanvita, te pimami vakantiya, yajanti abhidi purvakam, ahami sarvi yagyanam bhakta cha prabhurivacha, natu mama vijatiri, tat vinaspas chayavanti te. Quote, whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but is offered without true understanding. I am the only enjoyer and the only object of sacrifice. Those who do not recognize my transcendental nature fall down. End quote. In effect, Krishna says, persons engaged in worship of demigods are not very intelligent, although such worship is indirectly offered to me. For example, when a man pours water on the leaves and branches of a tree without pouring water on the root, he does so without sufficient knowledge or without observing regulative principles. The process of watering a tree is to pour water in the root. Similarly, the process of rendering service to different parts of the body is to supply food to the stomach. The demigods are, so to speak, different officers and directors in the government of the Supreme Lord. One has to follow the laws made by the government, not by the officers or directors. It's like India, right? The officers and the directors make the laws. Similarly, everyone is to offer his worship to the Supreme Lord only. That will automatically satisfy the different officers and directors of the Lord. The officers and directors are engaged as representatives of the government, and to offer some bribe to the officers and directors is illegal. Right? It never happens here because it's illegal, right? This is stated in Bhagavad Gita as abhidhi purvakam. In other words, Krishna does not approve the unnecessary worship of the demigods. In Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that there are many types of yajna performances recommended in the Vedic literatures, but actually all of them are meant for satisfying the Supreme Lord. Yajna means Vishnu. In the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that one should work only for satisfying yajna or Vishnu. This perfectional form of human civilization, known as Varnashram Dharma, is specifically meant for satisfying Vishnu. Therefore, Krishna says, I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices because I am the Supreme Master. However, less intelligent persons, without knowing this fact, worship demigods for temporary benefit. Therefore, they fall down to material existence and do not achieve the desired goal of life. If, however, anyone has any material desire to be fulfilled, he had better pray for it to the Supreme Lord, although it is not pure devotion, and he will thus achieve the desired result. Although Hiranyakashipu offered his obeisances unto Lord Brahma, now this is interesting, although Hiranyakashipu offered his obeisances unto Lord Brahma, he was strongly inimical towards Lord Vishnu. So that's especially a type of demigod worship which is not recommended. Sometimes we worship the demigods as devotees of Krishna, because they reflect Krishna's glories. But he's actually worshiping Lord Brahma in order to get some benediction that he hopes to kill Vishnu. Not good. Not the right mode of worship. This is the symptom of an asura. Asuras worship the demigods as being separate from the Lord, not knowing that all the demigods are powerful because of being servants of the Lord. If the Supreme Lord were to withdraw the powers of the demigods would no longer be able to offer benedictions to their worshippers. The difference between a devotee and a non-devotee, or asura, is that a devotee knows that Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that everyone derives power from him. Without worshipping the demigods for particular powers, a devotee worships Lord Vishnu, knowing that if he desires a particular power, he can get that power while acting as Lord Vishnu's devotee. Therefore, in the Shastra it is recommended, akama sarva kama moksha kama radadati tivrena bhaktina bhakti yogina yajitam param purush purusham param. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of material desires, free from material desires, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the supreme whole, the personality of Godhead. Even if a person has material desires, instead of worshiping the demigods, he should pray to the Supreme Lord so that his connection with the Lord will be established and he will be saved from becoming a demon or a non-devotee. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya gives the following quote from the Brahma Tarka. Since Vishnu is the Supreme, by worshiping Vishnu, one can fulfill all one's desires. There is no need to divert one's attention to any demigod. 72, Prabhupada visited Australia. I was in Australia from 70 to 75, and he visited three times while I was there, so I believe it was probably on his second visit. He was giving a lecture in the Glebe Temple Room, and the verse mentioned Hamsa Vimana. It might have been this very same verse, for all I know. The swan carrier of Lord Brahma. So there was one initiated devotee named Raghunath Das, and he had an interesting history. He was hot and cold. He would be hot on Krishna consciousness for 6 months, and then you could tell the symptoms, you know, starting to get a little offensive and snippy, you know, and then he lived outside. He had a wife and child, and then you wouldn't see him for 6 months. And then after 6 months, he'd sort of start easing back and get enthusiastic, and he'd get really fired up, and then this process of retraction would come, and this went on for years. In fact, the first time Prabhupada came to Australia, we'd gotten a letter from Kurunder in Los Angeles. It said it's the duty, it's the etiquette of the disciple to invite the spiritual master to his temple. And Kurunder said he probably won't come, but just go ahead and invite him anyway. So I wrote Prabhupada a letter and said, please come and visit Sydney. And a letter came back in short order. I'm coming. Send $3,000 for a ticket. In those days, we used to go out in dhotis and have Harinam and distribute back to Godhead. So maybe on a Saturday, we might collect $100, you know. And during the week, it was a lot less than that. You had rent, you had Sunday feast expenses, and so on and so forth. So $3,000, we had no idea. We had no idea. So we put a little thermometer up, you know, $3,000, and we got $27.33 to start with. And Raghunath had just sold his house and moved to an apartment, and he came forward and gave the $3,000 for Prabhupada to come to Australia. That was miraculous. Of course, later on, he wanted it back. So I think the second time Prabhupada came to Australia, Raghunath was in one of these transitional phases, sort of phasing out. And Prabhupada gave a lecture in which it was mentioned Hamsa Vimana. And during the question period, Raghunath says, how are we supposed to understand that Lord Brahma rides a swan? And Prabhupada said, What do you understand? What do you understand? You don't even understand the nose on your face. He said, what do you understand? What do you know? He said, you know your mother, that's it. You know? That's what Prabhupada said. And then if we extrapolate on a little bit, you know, we eat food, it digests. Do we understand how it digests? Our hair grows. Do we understand? When we do tours in our temple in Utah, there are a number of peacocks decorating the domes and carved in the altar, and we have about 20 peacocks on the property. So people who are just coming to Krishna consciousness for the first time, it's not like an Indian community coming across the threshold that has some basic. They know nothing. And so they always ask, what's the significance of the peacocks? And I say, this is just me. I mean, this is just what I say. I say, the peacocks, from my perspective, are significant because they give the lie to the Big Bang Theory. They give the lie to the Big Bang Theory. To think that out of an accidental explosion or a big bang, that you're going to get something as breathtakingly beautiful as a male peacock with their beautiful indigo blue necks and the combs on their heads and their tail feathers. To think that that would result as a result of an explosion is absolute ludicrousy. And I don't care if you have a PhD, an MA, a Nobel Prize. I don't care if you're a graduate of MIT. if you think that the peacock result is a result of a random bumping of chemicals, a random explosion, then you've really missed the most important thing in life. You've missed the most important thing in life. And the reason they've missed is because they're trying to understand everything. They're like Raghunath. How are we to understand this? How are we to do you understand a peacock? I mean, you get your notebook out and, you know. I mean, some people do. Some people probably put them on the dissection table and cut them open. But what happens as soon as you do that? What happens? The essence is lost. The beauty. The beauty, of course, which proceeds from the soul itself and is only reflected in the externals. As soon as you understand, as soon as you get down with your microscope and your dissecting tools and you look at the minutiae of it, you've missed the whole point of life. You've missed the whole point of life. One Nobel Prize winner who had so many accolades because of his research and discovery said that some or other I've reached the end of life and the mystery of life has slipped through my fingers. It has escaped me. So why are there peacocks? The larger question is why is there beauty? Is beauty something that you're supposed to scrutinize and understand? And why do people try to scrutinize and understand beauty? Because they want to some or other own it. They want to possess it, you see. Someone discovers a law of nature and then they're credited with that law, Newton's law. It's not Newton's law. So it's only when Newton discovered it, the law came into being. It wasn't working before Newton. You know, what is it?